So remember we talked about the sixth to the tenth commandment last time, right? And then also, but we talked about the issue of contraception last time, mainly. When I send you the email of the recording, I will also send you the content of Keeley. But my inside information tell me it's a free of charge, actually. So if you want to learn the method, it's pretty easy. And also, if you use phone, you can actually download the app to help you with the with the NFP. And then so we send you the email. And then also we talked about the precept of the church last time. Remember? So remember what are the precepts of the church? We talked about that we go to Mass on Sunday and Holy Day. We observe the days of penance, Ash Wednesday, Good Friday, and then we go to confession at least once a year, communion at least once a year, and then also contribute to the church, and then also in some catechism, we also mention about the observe the laws of marriage in the church. So, when you look at the book that we have, that actually after the precept of the church, then you find that part two is finished. Then you are going to part three, means of grace, the sacraments and prayer. So the two important way, you know, yeah, page 250. So we need grace in order to do good and avoid evil. Now remember there are two kinds of grace. There's sanctifying grace, which is the life of the soul. So we are spiritually alive because of sanctifying grace. And once you have sanctifying grace, the only way to lose sanctifying grace is commit mortal sin. And so when a person has mortal sin, the person has to regain sanctifying grace by contrition and by making confession. So sanctifying grace is the life of the soul. So only if we die in the state of sanctifying grace can we make to heaven. So it's really important. That's the life of the soul. But in order to grow in sanctifying grace, and even for people who are not in the state of sanctifying grace, to obtain sanctifying grace, we need the help of actual grace. And actual grace is the supernatural help of God that help us to do good and avoid evil. Help us to do good and avoid evil. without actual grace, we cannot be in the state of sanctifying grace for long. Because we cannot keep the commandment just by our own strength. We need actual grace to do good and avoid evil. We need actual grace to keep the commandments. Now, sanctifying grace stay in the soul. It's a stay in the state of sanctifying grace. So you are it's there to stay. Actual grace, they come when we need that. So God give us actual grace when the circumstance, you know, need actual grace. So God give us help when we need that. And oftentimes we may not even aware the working of actual grace. But the most effective way to obtain grace, sanctifying grace and actual grace, by prayer and sacrament. Prayer and sacrament give us grace. Now, sacrament, there are only seven sacraments. There are many sacramental. Sacramental is something instituted by the church to help us to pray. So like using holy water, different form of blessing, you know, they are called sacramental. The church instituted many sacramentals. The sacrament instituted by Christ, there are only seven of them. And sacrament is an outward sign instituted by Christ that gives grace. So that's what is a sacrament. So there are seven sacraments. Of the seven sacraments, three of them are called the sacraments of initiation. Because by those three sacraments, we enter into the community of the church. So we have baptism, confirmation, and communion as the sacraments of initiation. And so that's what we are doing at Easter, those sacraments of initiation. And then we have the sacraments of healing, confession, and anointing of the sick. They are the sacrament that heal our soul, forgive our sin, but also remove the remnant of sin, the anointing of the sick. And then there are two sacraments of communion, holy orders and matrimony. So total seven sacraments.
So is another the sixth extreme unction?
In the old days, when Bob was a little baby, mm-hmm. it was called extreme unction. Now because, you know, also when Ted was a baby too. Yeah, it was called extreme unction. When they were his age, yeah, it was called extreme unction. So the extreme unction means the last anointing. You think about, there are different kind of anointing. There are three kind of oil. Before you get baptized, you have the oil of catechumen. If you are a baby, anoint on the chest. If you are an adult, anoint on the hands. So before you get baptized, there's the anointing of the catechumen oil. And after you get baptized, you got anointed with the chrism oil. If you are a baby, you got anointed on your crown of the head. If you are an adult, after you get baptized, you get confirmation immediately. It's a sacrament. So that's another anointing, confirmation. And then if you are a priest, then you are also anointed with the chrism oil on the hands. If you are a bishop, when you are being consecrated bishop, it's poured into your head. So we got different kind of anointing during the life. And then in a normal circumstance, before you die, you know, you got anointed with the anointing of the sick. And so that's why it's called extreme unction, because that's the last anointing. But nowadays, it's usually called anointing of the sick. Yeah. Because it's also people in danger of death, they can already receive anointing of the sick. So it can happen, somebody might be quite young, in danger of death, and got anointed with the anointing of the sick before even receiving the sacraments of confirmation, or anointing of the, or a holy order. So it's possible. In many situations, it's the last anointing for people. But sometimes it might not be the last one. If somebody got sick quite young, in danger of death, got anointed, then the person recover. And then later on receive other sacrament, then it's also other anointing like confirmation or even holy orders. So
are you born with sanctifying grace, or do you receive sanctifying grace once you're baptized?
So when we are born, we don't have sanctifying grace, and that's why we are in the state of original sin. So when we receive baptism, then we have sanctifying grace. Now baptism for baby, they baptize the baby. When we baptize the baby, grace infused into the soul of the baby. For adults, if you not baptized yet, but you have the baptism of desire, you know, you love God, and you announce a love for God, you sorry for your sin, you have baptism of desire. That desire also can already, you have sanctifying grace because of baptism of desire. And of course, when you actually get baptized, then grace also infused into your soul. Because sanctifying grace can grow. And so all seven sacraments do increase sanctifying grace, do infuse or increase sanctifying grace. There are two sacraments that are given to infuse, to give sanctifying grace for those who have no sanctifying grace, and that is baptism and the sacraments of penance or the sacraments of confession. And by the way, the official name of confession is the sacraments of penance. If you look at the Code of Canon Law and an official document, it's called the sacraments of penance. But there are different names you can call confession. It also can be called sacraments of reconciliation. But the official name in the Code of Canon Law is called sacraments of penance. So those two sacraments, baptism and penance, they are given to give grace. And so that's why you see in the traditional distinction, you know, page 251, it's called the sacraments of the living and the sacraments of the dead. It's talking about spiritual alive or spiritually not alive, you know. So for those who may be in a state of sin, the sacrament to receive would be confession or baptism. And then of course, if you are in the state of only, and usually you are in the state of grace, and then you can receive the other sacrament. Now, it doesn't mean it's always like that, that the person receiving the sacraments of baptism and penance is always not in a state of grace. Sometimes because of our contrition, of our desire to receive the sacrament, we know we can already be in the state of grace. But we still will receive those sacraments before receiving the other sacraments of the living. So for the other sacrament like Holy Communion, like anointing of the sick, holy order, confirmation, matrimony, if a person knowingly and willingly receive those sacraments instead of mortal sin, that's a serious sin of sacrilege. So we should not receive those sacraments if we are not in the state of sanctifying grace. So it's really important that we in the state of grace to receive those sacraments of the living. So that's the distinction.
So if someone's married and they get divorced, but it's not approved by the Catholic Church,
yeah.
So they cannot receive the sacrament because they'll be in sacrilege?
Now, you know, some people, you know, the church does not encourage divorce, but the church sometimes tolerate a divorce because it's, you know, let's say he's not the Catholic spouse, the faithful one, is not the one who filed the divorce, you know, and the person go through the divorce to legally protect oneself, if no intention to attack the marriage bond, then sometimes the person might be civilly divorced, but it's not in a state of sin. A person in a state of sin is only when somebody, you know, go for a divorce with the intention to attack the marriage bond. So if a person have, some people, they are in the situation of divorce, it's not of their own fault, but because they are forced into that, or they have to file one to legally protect oneself. So I think that the difficulty is for those who are divorced, but they remarried outside the church.
Yeah,
and good. So when they remarried, then if the second union is not recognized by the church, and no, then they should not receive the Holy Communion. Then should ratify the situation first. Yeah.
So how do you ratify something like that?
Sometimes you might be able to apply for annulment when there's something you can look into that. First marriage is that grant for annulment to declare null and void, because sometimes it can be such a defect that it's null and void from the beginning.
And sometimes
it can be a lack of form, you know, that they are Catholic but they're supposed to marry in the Catholic Church. You can prove they haven't done so, then you can declare null and void. If the marriage is not a sacrament, the first marriage is not a sacrament, that means one or both are not baptized in the time of the first marriage, and it might be able to apply to the Pope. The Pope can dissolve a non-sacramental marriage in favor of a new marriage.
Oh, so that's to the Pope.
Yeah, you have to write to the Pope. And actually, it's not the couple write to the Pope, it's the priest have to write to the Pope on behalf of the couple. Yeah.
So it's a dissolution of the marriage, right?
Yeah, because the church can dissolve non-sacramental marriage, but the church cannot dissolve a sacramental marriage. The church cannot dissolve, because it's a sacrament, that means two are baptized, it's a sacrament. If that marriage is consummate, then no power on earth can dissolve that marriage.
What if one is Catholic and one is not?
Doesn't matter.
Because
if both are baptized, then the marriage is sacramental.
Oh.
Either you're baptized in Catholic or not Catholic, it's a sacrament. And also, don't forget, only Catholic are bound to marry in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
If you are not Catholic, you marry outside the Catholic Church, it's valid. The church recognizes.
Only do recognize.
Yeah. So when you become Catholic, you don't have to get married again. Too bad you cannot dress up. You know, you cannot like walking down the aisle. You know, no, you cannot do that. Yeah.
So something's not making sense here. Okay, so you divorce,
yeah.
But it's not approved by the church. You marry somebody outside of the faith, but you want to have communion. You can't have communion unless you divorce this new person, but the church doesn't approve of divorce, or you just can never have communion the rest of your life.
Okay, let me stop the recording first.